Jim Packard on for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along with us today as we switch gears to talk about copper culture, the Copper Culture State Park and Museum. Here in the studio is Monette Bibeau-Reinhardt, who is the curator of the Copper Culture State Park Museum at Oconto. And thanks very much for coming in, Monette.
Yes, thank you very much, Larry. I appreciate you having us.
Actually, I'm Jim, and Larry's
Jim.
Up in Canada
yes,
doing
some
golfing.
Yes, I know you're Jim.
And in just a moment, we'll be talking with Dr. Thomas Plager, who is Campus Executive Officer and Dean and Associate Professor of Anthropology Archaeology at the UW-Baraboo Sauk County. A 48-acre park at Oconto, claimed by the Menominee Indians as their ancestors, features an ancient Indian burial ground from the Copper Culture people, artifacts from which were tested to approximately 5 to 6,000 years ago. And at present, this is the oldest multi-burial cemetery site in Wisconsin and one of the oldest metal-use archaeological sites in North America. And we're pleased to talk about it today. And in just a few days, the museum will reopen, Monette. Is that true?
That's absolutely true. We do have some problems on that end, Jim, and I'll discuss those later on. One of the controversies of the site is in the dating that you mentioned. Excuse me. Initially, when it was tested by Walter Libby back in 1952, the year of the excavation, they came up with a dating of 7,500 years ago. And since I've taken over, I've discovered that 6 of the 21 burials have been dated. So we are tentatively accepting all those 6 dates and showing which features they pertain to if you come to the museum.
Mm-hmm.
Our big rock, which indicates where the excavations took place at the park, has the date of 5557 BC on it.
Hmm.
So that's really, my challenge is that I'd like to see someone prove Walter Libby's dating wrong. There are reasons not to accept it, but the reasons to me are not as important as accepting it
mm-hmm.
for now.
So he said it was 7,500 years old?
7,510.
Mm-hmm.
That was back in 1952.
And is it subsequent to that that the estimate has been made of the 5 to 6,000? Or was that a previous estimate?
Throughout the years since then and up into Dr. Plager's work, various datings have come up, and Dr. Plager himself came up with a dating that is officially being accepted of 3 to 4,000 BC.
Dr. Tom Plager is now with us, and Tom, thanks very much for spending time with us today. I believe...
Hi, Tom.
He's on the guest phone. There he is. Tom, go ahead.
Sorry,
I had the
pleased
wrong.
Pleased to be with you today. It's good to be on the show, Jim and Monette.
Hi, Jim.
Thank you
Tom.
So much for spending time. This takes you back to your graduate days at the University of Wisconsin, does it not?
Yes, this was a site that I did some work on while a graduate student in the Department of Anthropology, and as Monette indicated, the site was originally discovered in the 1950s, and there had been some work done on it, the original dating, some controversy over those dates in relationship to the shorelines of ancient Lake Michigan. And in the 1990s, I was able to receive some funding to go back to look at this site and several others from the archaic tradition, the time period that this site exists in, and to look at what we can learn using more modern techniques by investigating questions about who these people were and what type of trade systems they had and so forth.
Mm-hmm. So we've got this 48-acre park, which is now a state park. And on the grounds is a house that is the museum. Is that right?
What actually happened was in 1952, the burials were discovered by a boy, a 13-year-old boy, who was playing in the gravel excavation. I don't know if he actually picked up the bone and ran it to the sheriff or he just brought the sheriff back. That's my assumption. He brought the sheriff back.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I think there's a murder victim here. And it turned out they've started looking at the bones a little closer and they're going, no, those are pretty old bones. And that's how the Milwaukee Public Museum and the State Historical Society got involved, did the professional excavation in 52. By 59, Senator Reuben Lefebvre, was one of the amateur archaeologists on the project, and he was the one who was pivotal in making it a state park, which happened in 59.
That's right, because he was a reporter at the time of the discovery and was along with a couple of other gentlemen as they did that initial research.
Right, right. Reuben Lefebvre and George Hall did the first dig, a more of an amateur dig, discovered the copper, and that's when they reported it. So Senator Lefebvre thought it was important enough to make it a state park to protect it.
Mm-hmm.
That happened in 59, but the governor signed the bill, but unfortunately, we had a town dump on the site, and the DNR didn't want it with a town dump being operated. So it took another decade to actually close that dump. To the original people living in the house were still there until 72. So after that, then the work began making it a park where you put in the shelters, the public bathrooms, which have plumbing. It's a nice little nature trail down to the river, down past the excavation area. That happened in 76. Then the museum opened up minimally in 78. By 80, the guy who was running it was gone. And the state park was going to abandon it until the Copper Culture Historical Association moved in. And they made the full museum out of that house. The house was built in 1924. It's a little Belgian house. It's adorable. It's mm-hmm. small, but we're going to get a lot in it, I think.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, do you have any contact with Don Baldwin, who was the young 13-year-old?
No, I think I asked about him, and it seemed to me they told me he was deceased, but I'm not absolutely sure.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever contact him, Tom?
No, I have not had contact.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so the farm and the house is on the farm of Charles, is it Warrabrook?
Warrabrook.
Tell me about Warrabrook. Did you ever meet him, Tom?
No, I haven't.
Warrabrook died in 62, and his wife died in 72. Tom, you got involved in what, 90?
Yes, I've been familiar with the site, though, since the mid-80s and have done some work on it since that time.
Uh-huh.
The daughter, however, has been a volunteer there.
And she just passed away?
Nope. She was giving tours there until she was 96 years old.
I took that to mean that she passed on, but that just means that she had retired from doing the tours at the age of 96.
She's still hanging in there.
I think it's great that the site is, there's some interest in it again, and we're starting to see with the work that Monette's doing of bringing people back to the site. But what's really significant about it is the fact that up until the 1950s, we knew very little about the people that produced metal tools in the prehistory of our region. It wasn't until this site, one in near Potosi, and then another site just south of Oshkosh, discovered all in the 1950s and 1960s that archaeologists were finally able to establish a cultural connection between the people who produced ancient metal tools in Wisconsin, were able to isolate them in time based on the discoveries at a site like Oconto. It really is significant from an archaeological point of view.
It's very important to understand also that Wisconsin is known as the heart of copper tooling, and one of the reasons is the glaciers. Lake Superior is where a lot of this copper comes from. And Lake Superior, during the Ice Age, the glaciers actually pushed a lot of that copper southward, and we're right underneath. So it seems to me, and Tom, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems to me that they first started tooling copper with float copper. Doesn't that make the most sense?
We don't know that, but that is plausible.
Right.
Native people that first occupied the region at the end of the Ice Age were out on the landscape looking for the raw materials to produce tools, and that was predominantly stone, wood, and bone. And it's likely that someone came across copper and realized that when you strike it, it's malleable and does not flake. And so our oldest dates for metal technology surrounding copper are probably in the 6,000 BC or 8,000 year ago range in our region, but it may extend back even further that we just have not yet discovered.
Absolutely. That's a really good point, because so much underground yet we don't know.
We're talking about the copper culture and the Copper Culture State Park and Museum. Monette Bibeau-Reinhardt is curator of the Park Museum at Oconto, which is reopening on Memorial Day, correct?
Right. Well, actually, the Saturday before.
The Saturday before,
Saturday
which
before.
Makes it about the 23rd. And the times that it's open?
We are open every weekend, including holidays, from 10 to 3. But I'm going to add a little sidebar to that in a little while. But I want to really make sure people understand that with Tom's work in he's done lectures on this with the four burial sites in Wisconsin, we can start to understand the evolution of the copper culture system or the people that worked the copper.
Now, when you say four burial sites, are you referring all to Oconto or elsewhere
in the
state?
No, there's four burial sites in the state.
Which are?
The Osceola site near Potosi in Grant County.
Okay.
The Price site in Richland also has some copper materials. The Ray site not far from Oshkosh, Oconto. And then the other site that's toward the end of the time frame is Riverside, which is a late archaic cemetery that's located right on the across the border from Wisconsin, across from Marinette, Menominee, Michigan, and all of these sites are related in that the people that are buried at these sites participated in a technology that involved hot and cold hammering of copper.
And one of the things I noticed among the objects found at the site in Oconto at the Copper Culture State Park were a couple of freshwater clamshell, a large lightning shell, and what does that imply?
Well, the marine shell, the lightning whelk, I believe that you're speaking of, it tells us that people had access to long-distance trade very early in the state. Again, the dates that I think apply to the site are there's some controversy over the dating, but at least by 5,000 years ago, people in Wisconsin had access through either direct or indirect trade to materials as far away as the Gulf Coast of Mexico. In this case, the marine shell, its closest source would have been either the Gulf Coast or the far southeastern United States coastline. So people, once this technology was discovered, copper technology, were trading outside of the region. And this is one of the oldest examples in the state of long-distance trade. It's fairly minimal, one piece, but it tells us that people were connected. And you have to remember, there were no horses. Movement of goods would have been via watercraft or via foot. And the fact that someone in Oconto could secure an item that came from the Gulf Coast is really quite impressive.
It sure is.
The other idea, though, about those shells is that they came here with them in their possession. That is another possibility, but I am very, very excited about the idea of tracing a trade network, because it would seem that the Menominees came from the East Coast and migrated westward, as did their the bigger linguistic group, the Anishinaabe, and they could have kept in contact back and forth. But now what's neat about Oconto being the oldest, it's the oldest site in Wisconsin, is that there really are the fewest, well, we could say that for now, but the fewest pieces were actually found buried with them. And that might indicate, and Tom will correct me if I'm wrong, of course, I'm just learning, that might indicate that they weren't yet burying that much copper with themselves because they were too. It was too valuable to
we'll
them.
We'll pick up the story from there after we look at the latest news. Our guests are Monette Bebo Reinhardt, curator of the Copper Culture State Park Museum at Oconto, Dr. Thomas Plager, campus executive officer, dean, and associate professor of anthropology, archaeology at the UW-Baraboo Sauk County. I'm Jim Packard, and this is the Ideas Network. Good afternoon. I'm Jim Packard, in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network, as we talk about the copper culture in Wisconsin, the Copper Culture State Park, and the museum with Monette Bebo Reinhardt, who is the curator of the Copper Culture State Park Museum at Oconto. And Monette, thank you again for coming in today. It's a real pleasure to have you.
Thanks, Jim.
And Dr. Tom Plager is campus executive officer, dean, and associate professor of anthropology, archaeology at the UW-Baraboo Sauk County. And Tom, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Jim.
We're talking about the Copper Culture State Park, which is the oldest multi-burial cemetery site in Wisconsin, one of the oldest metal-use archaeological sites in North America. And while a graduate student at the UW-Madison, Dr. Plager conducted research on the collections from that site that allowed for new dating of the burials. We have a question about the copper culture people from Herb in Washburn County, who wonders, are there any locations in northern Wisconsin where prehistoric people were obtaining native copper or silver from bedrock source? I guess I'll ask that of you, Tom.
Yes, people were mining copper in the northern Wisconsin, but particularly in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, the Lake Superior Basin, the area that you can visit to see ancient copper mines, the Keweenaw Peninsula and the Houghton area, Isle Royal, our closest national park. Those regions were heavily exploited by native peoples using a mining technique to follow vein copper. So there is the right geology in the far northern part of the state, the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, the Lake Superior Basin, for vein copper to be mined. But as Monette indicated, the secondary source is float copper, which was transported into Wisconsin and other areas of the Western Great Lakes via glacial activities at the end of the last ice age, and that was the secondary source of metal.
So would it be that they were picking up silver off the ground in chunks, or are they looking at a load of copper?
You mentioned silver. Silver does occasionally occur with copper, and you do sometimes see silver embedded in some of these copper artifacts because the two, my understanding, is the geology where copper forms is also the type of geology that can lead to silver formations. But in the Lake Superior Basin, the mining, prehistoric mines that have been excavated suggest a technique of native peoples building intensive fires over veins of copper embedded in rock, heating that surrounding rock up, throwing water on it, which would shatter the surrounding rock matrix, and then using cobbles to hammer away to extract pieces or slabs or chunks of this metal that then were subsequently worked into tools.
Mm-hmm. If you have questions or comments about the copper culture, all you have to do is give us a call at 800-642-1234 and our email address talk@wpr.org. Talk about the research that has been done there at the Copper Culture State Park from your perspective, Monette.
The research I'm doing, basically, is what I'm doing is I'm working on a book, because what I want to do is pull in a lot of information I'm finding in a lot of different sources and put them in one people-friendly book. I mean, a lot of the stuff I read is real. It's scholarly, and I think the people don't really know much about these people because it can be hard to read sometimes. So I'm going to try and put it in user-friendly terms, and I'm also researching the history of the park itself. How did it come to be, and what were all the things that went on that it got to the stage where it's at today?
Mm-hmm.
So that's research I'm doing, and I'm hoping that Tom will, of course, read it and tell me if I'm, you know, misrepresenting anything. That's putting him on the spot now. We'll talk about that later, Tom. but yeah, the book, the museum, of course, is people-friendly. And that's really what museums are for, to present things to the public in a way they can understand. And so the book is going to reflect that. The museum is building on the research I'm doing with the book. So
you are a published novelist as well, because, as I understand, your latest book is available these days.
Yeah, my book Mystic Fire just came out. I have two fiction books, but I am working on nonfiction as well. I got a master's in history at UWGB. So I am approaching all this research from a historian perspective, whereas, you know, Dr. Plager is. Did you get yours in? I was going to ask you this, Tom. Did you get your degree in physical anthropology, or was it archaeology?
My degree's in archaeology.
Yes.
And I think what the contribution would here that would be very helpful is to have a popular, approachable text about the park in particular that doesn't exist now. There's a great deal of published professional literature on the site and on metal use by native peoples in the Great Lakes region. When the site was discovered after its original publications, it made world news. If you were in graduate school in archaeology, you read about Oconto as being one of the oldest, at that time, one of the oldest metalworking sites in the world. We now know that there is older metalworking in Southeast Asia and ancient Turkey. But for the Americas, this is one of the oldest sites that is a great legacy to interpreting and understanding prehistoric Native American cultural development in our region.
Altogether, Tom, how many remains were found when the site was excavated?
Well, the original report suggested in the 40s, but there were a number of physical anthropologists that did subsequent work on collections, and I think a realistic estimate is difficult because some of the material is fragmentary to suggest somewhere in the mid-50s was excavated, but the archaeologists at the site estimated that that's only a quarter of the total population there. And the remainder of those those burials were likely destroyed as a result of gravel quarrying activities or excavated by parties unknown. So the approximate sample of 50 or so represents only a quarter of the total site. And at that time, Wisconsin wouldn't have had laws to protect a site like this. Today, we're very fortunate that we do have legislation or enacted laws that protect Native American burial sites that would stop construction and allow scientific investigation and would allow the Native American community to be consulted as well. But at that time, there were no laws protecting these types of sites.
The museum is open from Memorial Day to Labor Day, correct?
Correct. We don't have a lot of funding. I would like to stay open through October, so I may try and get that accomplished this year. It's a beautiful time of year up there.
Mm-hmm. So there's been a renovation of the site that's been going on, what, since last Labor Day or even prior to that?
I've been wanting to get into the museum as a volunteer since the year 2000, and at that time there were a couple of volunteers working at that were happy with the status quo, with the way they were doing things. I was a volunteer first in 2007, and then we heard about this bypass coming through, and the bypass was coming right past our museum. They were making sure it wasn't touching our site. Because like Tom said, our site is protected. In fact, I didn't mention it's a National Historic Landmark as well.
Okay.
It's the only site in Wisconsin of the four burial sites, five if you count the one in Michigan that he mentioned, Riverside. Mm-hmm. It's the only one that has a museum, it's of its own, that has a state park and National Historic Landmark status. So with all of that, we stand poised, and this is my hope for the future, that we can become the U.S. Center of Copper Archaic Copper Research. I don't know of a better place in Wisconsin to do that, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of our huge goals in the future. But because of the bypass then going through, we have more visibility. People can see us as they drive by. So last year when I took over, I pulled out all the weeds and I planted flowers because they could see what we look like on the outside. You know, we don't want weeds in the front. So then this year we had to come up with money. So I reinvigorated the Copper Culture Historic Association, which was a membership that started in 82, which is when the first museum was really fully instigated in the building. And Tom was actually my second member. Thank you very much, Tom. And he's an advisor for our committee. And so we were able to raise enough funds. We needed a complete interior cleaning, a complete interior painting. And by doing that, this cute little Belgian home has built-in closets. We've opened those closets up. Tom, you've got to come see this. It's awesome. We've opened those closets up. When we're putting stuff inside, each room has its own theme. We have the copper room, the excavation room, the culture room, the woodland. We go into the woodland Indians because even on contact with the Europeans, the Indians were wearing copper. They had copper. They were using it. We don't know how much they were actually tooling it, though, do we, Tom?
Well, Native peoples were using copper throughout really almost their entire existence here in the Great Lakes.
Right.
But at the time of historic contact, it seemed to be primarily in the form of ornaments, and the major production in the form of tools was not occurring that late in time.
Right. And we haven't been able to figure out why they stopped tooling in copper. Did the copper become too hard for them to find?
So that's the big question.
Yeah,
why
did
they stop and where do they go?
Right. So that's one of the things we want to get researched and one of the things I'll be working on.
All right.
Right.
Let's take some phone calls. Let's go to Doug in Trevor first. Doug, go ahead.
Hi. You just touched on what my question was. I'd read a book about how much copper was taken out of Wisconsin and Michigan. As far as the mining, their estimates are guesses, but they don't find so much you're saying the ornamental things and the tools. Going back to your thing about the trade with Central America, do you see anything like with the culture, more than just that clamshell they found? Do you see a similarity with the culture from Central America and the culture, like how they buried them? Did they make more copper? It seems like they got more copper mined than the artifacts that you're finding in Wisconsin and Michigan to kind of beef up what you're saying about the trade with Central America.
Right. Yeah. I've heard that theory, Doug. And unfortunately, there is no way to know how much copper was mined. And there have been these gigantic theories that a lot of the copper was taken by Europeans and taken over to Europe by different cultures. And we have to be careful of those theories because they are theories and they're really not based on any real good science. Tom?
There's no evidence to suggest trade, transatlantic trade or trans-Pacific trade involving copper technology. There's also no evidence to connect Central American or South American cultures to the copper industry that occurred here in the Great Lakes region. But there is certainly evidence to indicate, at least in eastern North America, Midwestern, and even on to the western Great Plains, trade extending over those distances where people outside of the Great Lakes region either interacted directly or indirectly with native peoples in our area and exchanged materials from those regions for probably copper in our area. And although I'm very familiar with these calculations that suggest that there was considerably more copper removed from what's been discovered, but that really is probably not true. If you look at literally the thousands of implements that have been found across the Great Lakes region, dating farmers first started to find these tools back in the 1850s, that it's really an impressive amount of copper. And there is a significant amount of Great Lakes copper in the form of artifacts found in the Ohio River Valley area into the southern Great Lakes that was traded outside of the region. So I don't think that there is necessarily a problem trying to estimate how much copper was removed versus how much was used by native peoples. We don't know how much is still out there that has been yet undiscovered. But people definitely were trading over a very long distance in North America, but does not appear to be trade outside of eastern North America, maybe slightly into western North America, but certainly not into Europe or into South America.
I'd like to talk about Central America for a minute. I used to think that they could certainly well have traded with the people living in Mesoamerica, but I've since found out that there are copper mines down there, too. And what we have to do, if we're going to establish a trade network, is we have to establish, is this copper Great Lakes copper that these cultures have?
And that's been done. There are a number of chemical archaeologists or archaeologists working in chemistry, archaeological chemistry, that have done trace element analysis on copper from the Great Lakes. And they've identified that the majority of specimens that have been found in eastern North America come from the Great Lakes. There are some other sources of copper in the Appalachian area that probably account for later copper use, but there has been no discovery of metals in eastern North America that can be attributed prehistorically to originating in Central South America or Europe.
Right. Just because it's copper tooling doesn't mean it's from the Great Lakes. We have more research to do.
Doug, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate hearing from you. And David is next in Oneida. Hi, David.
Hi. Yeah, I was just interested. The homeland of the copper culture is within the heartland of the Menominee Nation.
Right.
And we have a history that goes back at least that far. I was just wondering, could you give me, I might have missed it, I tuned in late, could you give me a timeline of how late the copper culture is dated?
We have a little controversy on that, you know. We have the Willard-Libby testing that was done in 1953 that dates them back 7,500 years from 1953. Our rock at the site claims 5557 B.C. is when the oldest of these sites could be dated back to. But Dr. Plager has a different dating, and it's very possible that this area has been used over a considerable amount of time. Now, I'm aware of the Menominee legend that says they arrived here, or they became Menominee, or they emerged at the Menominee River 8,000 years ago. So that's it correlates. It correlates.
Well, mind if I
yes, jump in.
Comment here? A couple of points. One, the Okano site, even if we accepted that earliest date is not the earliest date in eastern North America on copper metal use, we now have dates into the 5 and 6,000 BC from copper tools in the Lake Superior Basin. So I think most archaeologists would agree that metal technology utilized by prehistoric native people started as early as 6,000 BC, maybe even earlier. The question that Monette is referring to is what is specifically the age of Oconto, and we disagree on what dates are appropriate for the age of that site. But the other question that you asked about in terms of connections to the Menominee, geographically, the Menominee lived in this area. They do have an oral creation story that Monette referred to, and have a tradition of originating at the mouth of the Menominee. But archaeologically, it's very difficult to extend their ethnicity back in time to connect it with this particular population. We don't know how far and back in time we can identify the Menominee as an ethnic group from the archaeological material. So connecting the site to the Menominee is entirely possible, but from an archaeological point of view is difficult to do at this point other than simply being that the Menominee exist in this area today and at historic contact.
Monette, you mentioned this memorial stone at the Copper Culture burial site has some inaccuracies, I understand. What would some of those inaccuracies?
Well, the stone itself isn't really inaccurate. I mean, the stone has the original date of Libby's testing. Now, we could say that it's inaccurate because we want to accept the 3,000 to 4,000 BC, and that makes the stone inaccurate. But because we have six different features with six different dates, I don't see any reason to throw any of the dates out at this point.
Okay.
And so for our purposes and to show people how long they could have been burying
here. I think that what I was thinking of was is there Indian mounds that are mentioned?
Oh, that, yes. Oh, I forgot about that. When the park first opened up, it was referred to as Copper Culture Mound State Park. And we still have a sign that says Copper Culture Mound State Park. Sorry about that, Tom. It's still there. The word mound is inaccurate. We do take that off now. It's Copper Culture State Park.
So there was no mound, or if there was a mound,
Archaics
it was obliterated?
Archaics did not bury in mounds. That has to first and foremost be clear. The Woodland Indians began to build the circular mounds and the different shapes, and then they built the effigy mounds eventually. That's woodland, late woodland. Archaics did not. They might have found a natural embankment, a natural high point.
Mm-hmm.
That maybe later on was referred to as a mound, and maybe that's where they might have got the idea to start burying a mound. But
so they used burial pits, Tom?
Well, yes, archaic. The term archaic is an artificial name. There isn't any Indian group that would have called themselves archaic.
Yeah,
this
for
is
sure.
a construct that's supplied by archaeologists to recognize cultural patterns that are quite similar that date from after the Ice Age up until the first millennium BC. And what we know about these people is they were hunter-gatherers involved heavily in fishing, collecting plant resources, hunting terrestrial game, again, fishing, did not have bow and arrow technology, did not have ceramic or pottery technology, and did not construct mounds. These cultures predate mound construction. And we think one of the functions of sites like Oconto is they may have very well acted as a territorial marker. They would have been on a high knoll, very sacred place for native peoples to visit, a claim of ownership, of connectivity to the landscape that would have been visible to people coming up and down the Oconto River. And even though they didn't construct an earthen a cap above the burials, it was located on a high elevation that would have been observable from the water if you were navigating the Oconto River.
One of the things we should provide is directions to the park. Oconto is on the east side of the state.
Yes, I notice we are running out of time. I want to quickly mention that because of the volunteers we had this past summer, we got the place cleaned and painted without impacting our meager resources there. Great volunteers in the community of Oconto and Abrams and elsewhere. But unfortunately, with the bypass that's running past us, and we're now getting our road closed because they're putting in a roundabout mm-hmm. to come off the highway. And it doesn't close our park totally, but it makes it very difficult to get to. The best way is to come up 141 heading north on 141, where the highway divides, 41 and 141 out of Green Bay, divide at Abrams, head north on 141 to 22, and then take 22 toward Oconto, where our park is west of Oconto. But that doesn't end the detour, unfortunately. Then you have to turn on County or on Cream City Road to the right, and take that all the way down to where it dead ends on River Road and take River Road to our site.
Are there signs along the way?
No. Mm-hmm. I called the DOT yesterday, and they said, no, we have no plans of giving you any detour signs. And the DNR, who operate the site, say, well, we've talked to the DNR, but we can't, or the DOT, and we can't get anywhere.
Is there a website for Copper Culture State Park?
There is. I just updated my website, actually. I don't have the other websites updated. We don't have an official Copper Culture website, unfortunately.
Jim, the site is marked in the Gazetteer for Wisconsin, so folks that have the Gazetteer map can find it, although, as mentioned, there's some detouring involved.
But the detours aren't marked, and if you don't know the roads to turn on, you're not going to find it. So I'm going to try and update every site I can.
And is there a phone number that people
can call? Absolutely. I'll give them mine. And if we do end up closing because we can't get people to come to it, I'll open it up at any time for anyone. My number is
920-826-7304.
We've done a lot of wonderful work, and it'd be a shame not to be able to show it off.
Exactly.
And I'd like to make a couple of final comments here. I really would like
to
applaud Manette's work and the people of Oconto. This is a world-class archaeological site. It has the potential to be of interest and provide future research and a window into the past. So the fact that there's a group now interested in Manette's work of maintaining the park and bringing it up to an attraction that could generate interest from people coming into the area, tourists, I think is great. It's a tremendous resource for learning about the prehistory of our state.
Thanks so
Thank
much.
Thank you, Dr. Thomas Plager, professor of archaeology, anthropology at the UW-Baraboo-Sauk County, the campus executive officer at UW-Baraboo-Sauk County, and Manette Beeble-Reinhardt, who curates the Copper Culture State Park Museum at Oconto, which is reopening on Saturday. And you're invited to attend.
Thanks.
I'm Jim Packard. Thanks to Brittany DeAnda for on-air production here on the Ideas Network.